The date is August 18th, 1989, and we're watching Casualties of War. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name's Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the grenade to my latrine.
I mean, it's good that you tried to make light of what has to possibly be, like, the biggest downer of a movie in the history of this podcast, but yeah. Hello, everybody. My name is Colin Stewart.
I just didn't want to dance around the delicate relationships of being anybody else. And I couldn't remember the one ally's name that he had back at camp. So I'm like, no, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Grenade and a poop bucket. So this week we're looking back at August 1989 when the movies and theaters were The Abyss. I didn't know that movie was that old. Why do I forget that that movie's from the 80s? Like the cutting edge water special effects. I don't know if you've seen.
I haven't seen
The Abyss, but the water effects. I mean, it's kind of what brought on the T-1000 in T2. Okay. So, yeah. The Abyss, The Package, A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, fresh off of our recent episode of the first one of those, subject of episode 152, Uncle Bach, and of course, our movie for today, Casualties of War. Which do you want to see, Uncle Bach or Casualties of War? Which earned, not very many people did want to see this one, $18.67 million on a $22.5 million budget. So,
so close.
Yeah, going for the awards, but not going for popular interest, I guess. So, yeah, that hurts a bit.
Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like getting hit in the head with a shovel, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Good on you for also depicting the safe one. So, I found three taglines for the poster of this movie. The first one: inspired by a true event that the army never saw it coming. Now, that was not me stuttering like I often do. That was actually how I copied and pasted it from IMDb. It says that the army never saw it coming. So I don't know whether there's a typo on IMDb. But yes, I'll say that one more time. Inspired by a true event that the army never saw it coming. So it's still a boring tagline either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a clear grammatical error and just overall uninteresting.
Yeah. So the next two are the ones that have a little bit more flavor. Number two, some soldiers take things too far. I think that's concise. Appropriate. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, number three, I do kind of like here. Number three, even in war, murder is murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My tagline would have been, war, what is it good for?
Yeah. Absolutely nothing, baby. So, not very good descriptions of this movie. So, let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right. During the Vietnam War, American soldier Max Erickson grapples with his country's role in the war and loyalty to his platoon after they kidnap, rape, and eventually murder a local girl after he fails to seize an opportunity to get her to safety. When Erickson tries to achieve some measure of justice for the murdered girl, he is confronted by his former friends who want to kill him before he can reveal the truth, and the corruptness of the higher-ups in the American army who just want him to let it go and sweep it under the rug. There you have it.
Yeah, some heavy rug sweeping going on. Yeah. So Foxvember is here, and we are. I wanted to show you the serious side of Michael J. Fox because This is the third in a row of serious movies that he did around this time period. And so here we go, serious Michael J. Fox. And now I think I have a confession. I don't know if I've seen this movie before. Like, I know that I've seen Full Metal Jacket. I know I've seen Platoon. I might not have seen this one. I was not very familiar with this movie as I watched it at all. There were a couple of standout moments. But yeah, so that's my history with Casualties of War. I just wanted to bring you a different side of Michael J. Fox, and so I plucked this one, I guess, out of my ass, not out of nostalgia. So, I mean, Colin, do you have anything else to say about your personal history with Casualties of War, or anything else to say about Michael J. Fox, of which you've already said plenty in our last couple episodes?
I'll save my Michael J. Fox for later. I had no history with this movie. I'm also realized, like, I don't have a lot of history with, like, the Vietnam War movies or history. So
Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump, yeah, I guess, yeah. That would probably be it. Like, I think I've only seen, like, that ending of Platoon. Like, the scene that's, like, on the cover of, like, the DVD or the
Blu-ray
or
whatever. Yeah, where he's on his knees with everything exploding behind him, yeah.
But I think that's all I've seen of that. Okay. I did recently listen to a musical called Dogfight. I don't know if anyone's heard of it.
I've heard of it, yes. For some reason, through happenstance and different theater productions, have inherited a set of dog tags that were used in a production of Dogfight.
Okay.
But I've never seen Dogfight.
Yeah. I looked it up because I was looking for audition songs, and the one I use right now is by Derek Klena, who played like the lead male role in Anastasia, which is where the song I use right now comes from. But he was also the lead in Dogfight, and that musical kind of like centers around guys who are about to go to Vietnam. But it's not really about the war. It's about like the lead up to the war, where they all decide to have like a party where the whole goal is to see who can bring the ugliest bait to the fight. And that's where the term dogfight comes in. It's not talking about like planes fighting. It's talking about ugly chicks. So,
Butterfaces.
So, interesting musical. I do recommend it. There's some good music, and it's got a good story, despite its terrible premise. But yeah, that's kind of the extent of my knowledge of Vietnam.
Yeah, see, and it's also interesting for me because I went a little bit deeper than I ever thought I would into Vietnam, because several years ago I was in a production of Miss Saigon.
Okay.
So I wanted to know a little bit of what I was talking about when it came. You know, I read a few articles, read a couple of essays, that kind of thing. So since the last time I viewed this movie, if I have in fact viewed this movie, I've definitely learned a lot more about Vietnam. And I mean, that goes for any Vietnam movie. So, yeah.
I think if I had to bait, like, what I know of Vietnam is pretty much all based on pop culture. So, like, The Simpsons, King of the Hill, like, adult animation mostly. And, all that I ever gather of Vietnam.
<Forrest Gump. laughs>
Yeah, all that I ever gather of Vietnam is that it fucked a lot of people up, led to, like, incredible amounts of PTSD. It's, like, the war that America lost but won't admit to losing. These are kind of the things that, like, it's, like, it seems to me it's like a black spot on, like, American war history. And that's kind of my takeaway of what I know about Vietnam.
Yeah, as the one tagline says, some soldiers take things too far, and Vietnam is the one that's known for soldiers taking things a little bit too far. So
yeah, like I think Cobra Kai touches on Vietnam a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. So alrighty, here we go. Let's jump into Casualties of War, directed by Brian De Palma. So automatically, we know that we're out for something new on this show, because I don't think we've had a Brian De Palma film on this. And he's known for things like Scarface and Carlito's Way and The Untouchables, Mission Impossible, Bonfire of the Vanities. A much more celebrated director than we're used to covering. They're not the John Badhams of the world or the Joe Dantes of the world. You know, we've got a little bit more clout with Brian De Palma. Produced by Art Linson and written by Daniel Lang, who is the one who wrote the book Casualties of War, and David Rabe. Interestingly, apparently David Rabe disassociated himself from the film, saying that Brian De Palma had not been faithful to his script. So he's listed, but I guess he doesn't like the fact that he's listed.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I found a Finnish translation. I do like these new these translations I've been finding. The Finnish translation for this movie is Scars of War.
Yeah. I feel like that's a more apt title than Casualties of War.
Yeah. there's something about this movie I do have to say. I want to get this out of the way right off the bat. Is something feels off about this movie. I mean, okay, in the beginning you said, you know, you're not much of a scholar on Vietnam movies. What about war movies in general? Like, do you like a Saving Private Ryan? Or
yeah, like 1918? I love Saving Private Ryan.
Dunkirk.
I haven't watched a lot of war movies, but like I loved like Band of Brothers and The Pacific. Like those are like two of my favorite like HBO shows for sure.
Okay.
Saving Private Ryan is probably, it's like the, I've seen like, yeah, I like that. I watched Fury with Brad Pitt. I like that one a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
Inglourious Bastards. I love that movie.
So World War One, World War Two, you have a few under your belt at least.
Yeah.
It's just Vietnam, not really. Yeah. Okay.
I'll say, like, there was something about this movie that I don't know if it was, like, because it's a standard, I was watching, like, a standard definition version of it on, like, a 4K TV. And I don't know if, like, if it was doing something to the appearance of it. But, like, I could not tell where this movie was filmed. And, like, if it was filmed on location or not. Or if, like, they were using like weird camera tricks or like some sort of like fake background, like, or if it was just like my TV.
Well, they were filming in Thailand.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of them got sick because they weren't adjusted to the Thai diet, and a lot of them got sick for a little while they were filming this. So yeah, I did read that fact. Otherwise, like, I was sitting here racking my brain. I'm like, what did I read? Because I didn't fucking look up locations.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember it saying that, yeah, the Thai cuisine was a problem for them. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think in my brain, I had it in my mind that this was going to be, even though we're in Foxvember, I was assuming, like, he was going to be in the backseat in this one, and it was going to be, like, a Sean Penn heavy movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's Fox Penn right there on the right on the poster. Yeah, they're the only two names. They're the only two names that are listed before they list like a bunch of the behind the scenes people, and then the main credits roll. Yeah, like I was even impressed with the fact that this movie opens with Casualties of War, and then nothing. No more words, except unless it's a location or something. But we're not. Showing our stars off. No, we're showing the story off. It's based on a true story. Recognize, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I want to get back to what I was saying before I got off on a tangent. Something about this movie feels off. And that's why I wanted to know what your history with war movies is. Because is there some level of intensity that's missing from this war movie? Like, even the battle scenes never feel like they're too much of a hazard. Like, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, from what I've heard of Vietnam, like, the reason why Vietnam was so hard is that you never knew the difference between like the VC and the Viet Cong fighters and the Vietnamese fighters that were
The
on here.
civilians, yeah, the
And
militias, yeah.
the Viet Cong used like, I think it was like the first time they had like encountered like that like guerrilla like war style tactic. So they talk about like the tunnels and stuff. There's I think what you're picking up, I thought this too is like the war scenes, like even that first battle where Erickson gets like stuck in the hole and whatnot, everything seems really sanitized.
Yeah.
And like even the way it's
Very
shot.
deliberate, very choreographed.
Even the way it's shot, it seems like, oh, this is set up. This is like it's not, it doesn't have that like close up personal, like gritty
Handheld.
intent, yeah, that you see in like other
Yeah.
war movies.
Yeah, so sanitized, I like that word. I think that's where I'm, yeah, I was having this weird disconnect where with just, you know, like it's a war movie and they're doing these horrific things. And I mean, it's nice that they do it from like our hero's perspective. They do it from Erickson's perspective because I don't want to see an intense rape scene. This isn't Game of Thrones that I'm watching. I don't need to see that. I don't mind it being shot in this artistic way from like, you know, the his perspective almost. But there is something that's missing from the rest of it because yes, it is very set up the rest of the time. Yeah,
Well, I
I don't
actually
know.
think another thing that's like missing in this movie, that first scene happens where like Erickson gets in the hole. What's Sean Penn's character's name? Sergeant, like,
See, I
for, I
have
can't remember how to.
Ross or no, it's
No, it's like something weird. It's like, yeah.
Mervais
Yeah, Mervais,
or
like,
Meserve, sorry.
Meserve. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sergeant Meserve saves him. So that happens, and it sets up this thing that isn't really paid off, but it's meant to be kind of like the linchpin later on at the end of the movie. Because then we get to the end of the movie, and they're really trying to frame like Erickson, like, this guy saved your life. Like, what are you gonna do to him? He saved your life, man.
Yeah,
Like, how are you gonna,
you should be giving him accommodation. You should be
yeah, like.
getting him a Bronze Star. Yeah.
But the problem is like they didn't take enough time in between or even after that scene to show that Erickson is like indebted to him.
Yeah,
Or that somehow it's like gelled their relationship. Like you never really like even after that, you never get the sense in between that like Meserve is somebody that Erickson really wanted to be like. Like
That's true, yeah.
for the ending to. Not that it doesn't pay off, but I felt like there was something about tonally about this movie that I felt was off the whole time. And the more I thought about it, the more I think it's this is like, if you really wanted to like for there to be like an emotional turn for the audience, it's like we needed to at some point believe that Erickson believed that Meserve was like the A-list like soldier of soul, like Captain America, like you could do no
He
wrong,
had
like
to drool over him the way Clark does.
yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
No, I definitely like that idea is that there should have been more on it because we spent so much of the movie. There were several different scenes where we have Erickson going, "Sarge, I just want to know what's going on, Sarge."
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, like that's all that I don't know what's going on here, Sarge. And it's like, okay, yes, that we're repeating this scene over and over again. Well, if you're gonna repeat something, it should be like, you owe me, kid. I saved your life.
Yeah, I think one of my probably favorite scene in the whole movie, it's like after they kidnap the girl and they get to like the top of the hill, and I think they're like about to go to the hooch or whatever they're calling it,
Yeah.
and you know Meserve is like, you see Ross, he's not Viet Cong, Clark, he's not Viet Cong or VC, like she's VC. I'm not VC, and then he's like, and you, I don't know about you. Like that scene I thought was amazing. Like, and that I wanted more of that Sean Penn
Yeah.
in this movie. Like I thought that scene was incredible, but again, it's a great scene, but there's not enough like built out around it to like
Yeah.
go from there.
See, and again, it's that like that's it's that disconnect that I was feeling, or that sanitized nature of it, is you have all these separate performances that are incredible. There were a few good scenes like that. I agree with you. That is definitely a standout scene. But even when everyone gets their moment at the end, when they're on trial and they get their passionate monologue of why they participated in this, even then, it doesn't feel like it got there naturally. Like there's
Yeah,
it's it's it's
totally, totally.
it's kind of like a musical. You know how a musical, it's like there's some of those musicals where it's just musical the whole way through, Hamilton or the Book of Mormon, things like that, where there is very little acting. But then there are some musicals where it's like we're doing a scene and now we have to stop for a song, and that's how it feels. That's kind of how this movie felt, is it's like now we have to stop for a dramatic scene, some really intense shit, and then la-di-da-di-da, we're walking for a little while, and then now we have to pause for another dramatic scene.
Yeah, there were some weird like script issues like that. Like there was the one part where I think audibly was like, what? Was Erickson, after the girl gets killed, they go back and he's trying to get anybody who'll listen to listen or whatever, and he has the moment with the chaplain. And then you think that's gonna be it, like the chaplain is gonna be the one who like leads the charge again. But then it cuts to this like good cop, bad cop weird
Oh,
scene.
smash cuts to
Yeah,
like, yeah,
like
he's in a
smash cuts
chair being
to this,
interrogated,
and he's like,
hot
oh
light
fuck. And
on him.
it's like, oh, you said you walked in, you're a liar. And then
Yeah.
he's like,
Yeah,
but
you
anyway,
walked out. Yeah, no, I was flown out. Yeah.
it all hinges on this, no, I was flown out.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
then all of a sudden they're like, oh,
Yeah.
maybe he is telling the truth because those guys would have killed him. And then it's like all of a sudden the dominoes fall and these like detectives put it all together. And I'm just like, come on, like
Yeah.
that's gonna be it. Like, I don't know,
Yeah, hopefully the real cops in this true story weren't as dumb as
yeah,
these guys.
like you're
They
not gonna
clearly were.
start at where's the body? Like, can we find
Yeah.
the body? Like, I
Yeah.
don't
Oh, wait. We have
know.
evidence?
Yeah.
This isn't a case of no body, no crime? Like,
Yeah. Yeah, there's also like the overall, like even at so like at the beginning of the movie, it's like you see Erickson like having hot flashes on the subway and he sees this girl, and then we go through the whole story, and then basically the way the story ends is like it's almost like a sequel setup. Like I'm fully expecting a run-in like post-war with Majeure and the rest of these guys, like
Right?
because it
I was
just seems
expecting
like,
them to come onto the train. If
yeah, it
this
just
wasn't based
seems,
on his true story, that's what I expected.
yeah, it just seems like the point is like he's being forced to watch his back constantly, like and that at any point like these guys who he's wronged now are gonna come for revenge.
That's how
And
it's implied, at least.
it's implied, but it's like unearned, like at the end, because then it's like she gets off the train, and then we're supposed to believe like he failed to help that one girl escape, and she got murdered horrendously, but he made up for it by getting her that scarf,
Well, I had this at the end of my notes, but let me tell you this now, just since we're already talking about it. There was a deleted scene which during all the like testimonials during the actual court martial, where there would have been testimony from the murdered girl's sister, where she tearfully displays her dead sister's scarf. So now all of a sudden that end scene is a little more poignant, because like, oh, like there was this scarf moment with the sister. Like, a scarf has meaning all of a sudden. So, I mean, it would have been kind of a dumb thing to tie together, but it would have made just, like, just a whisker more sense, at least.
Yeah. Like, this, yeah, this whole movie, it feels like a bunch of good ideas, but not put together correctly.
Yeah.
Like, instead of being like war, trial, train, whatever's happening in the quote-unquote present day, this almost would have been like one of those movies that would have been better off like starting in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And then like, let's go back and like see how the story unfolds and all this. There and like that kind of like, you know, what type of movie, like that type of movie.
Yes.
I think that if I was able to like make
rearrange it, and yeah. It's all of a sudden a fantastic movie.
Because the whole, even the thing where like Ross or Clark, whatever, like puts the grenade in the latrine, it's so ham-fisted in. It's like they just wanted to show, I don't know, that his like life was in danger, I guess. But I think it just like, it doesn't.
Going off be a bigger deal?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's clearly like he saw the grenade. So, like, isn't the army going to investigate, like, why an American tried to kill another American as well? Like,
yeah,
no attempted, like, why doesn't he get also an attempted murder charge stacked on there? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of loose ends in this movie. Or, like, the story is good, obviously. Like, it's based on a real story.
Yeah.
So, like, the story is good. It's just the way the movie was built around it, it's like me talking right now. I have a good story to tell everybody, but like I'm just not putting it together properly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, there is one thing that I really want to talk about. We have to go down this cast list, because if there's anything that blew my fucking mind,
it was this
cast list. So I know we've kind of, you know, we've been lazy on it, haven't done it, whatever, whether we get to it or not, but we have to talk about these people.
Right. So obviously we got Michael J.
Yeah.
As Private First Class Max Erickson.
Yeah.
Sean Penn is Sergeant Tony Meserve. Don Patrick Harvey is Corporal Thomas E. Clark. And then the shocker to me, John C. Riley.
Yeah.
A young, thin John C. Riley.
Like, sexual dynamo John C. Riley. This is his movie debut. He was in Above the Law before this. Like, he was an extra. And so he's technically uncredited, but of course IMDb found him. But yeah, I guess, though, Stephen Baldwin was originally cast as Hatcher.
Okay.
And shot several scenes before he was replaced by John C. Reilly, who was hired as a background extra.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I guess you can still see Stephen Baldwin in some of the shots. Like, his name is further down this list, right near the bottom, is one of those uncredited ones. But yeah, he is in there. But he was originally Hatcher.
Yeah. And then we got a very, very young John Leguizamo as Private First Class Antonio Diaz. When I saw that he was in this movie, I'm not going to lie to you, there was a part of me that was really afraid he was going to be a Vietcong guy. And I was just very worried for 1989.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, don't worry about that. Like, we made sure that we kept him as Diaz. Because, you know, we made sure we killed off the black guy from the platoon right away.
Yeah.
We can only replace people of color. We can't have two on the same squad.
Yeah.
Right, though. I wouldn't have been surprised.
And then we have Hui Tu Lee as Tran T. And she also plays the Asian student on the train. Eric King is Specialist 4 Brownie Brown.
Eric King, I know he's in Dexter. He's Sergeant Dokes. I'm sure we've seen him on this show before, though. Maybe he was in one of the Mortal Kombats.
Let's see. What do I know him from? I think he was in Malcolm in the Middle.
Nice.
Yeah, I think Dexter is the only thing that's the only thing where he had, like, a recurring role. Everything else he did was kind of just, like, one-offs. He was in Oz.
Okay. I just feel like I've seen his picture before in my research. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were on this nightmare of a name.
Right. Jack Gwaltney?
Gwaltney, sure.
As Rowan. Big Ving Rhames as Lieutenant Riley.
Ving, we've got the meets, Rhames. Yeah, I another one, like John C. Riley, where it's just like, I've never seen skinny Ving Rhames.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dale Dye is Captain Hill. Hote McCallany is Lieutenant Kramer. Dan Martin is Sergeant Hawthorne. Wendell Pierce is McIntyre. Sam Robarts, Chaplain Captain Kirk. Steve Larson.
Chaplain Captain Kirk.
As an agent.
I think that's whatever. Yeah. And for some reason, Amy Irving as the voice of the girl on the train, they decided to dub her. So, she had broken English, right? Amy Irving doesn't sound like the most. No. This sounds like John Leguizamo playing one of the VC. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I spoke too early.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. They make up with it with all the other racisms that they throw around in this movie. Boy, oh boy. If I wasn't watching a heavy drama, I'd be like, cringe meter all over the place. But I understand, unfortunately, the need for the language. But, ugh. To think about living in a time where I have to say some of that all the time just to fit in.
Yeah. It
doesn't feel right. Or abduct and assault a woman, you know, like, just to fit in. Just to be part of the gang.
Just want to be part of the team, guys.
Yeah, that's right. But that's what happens when you take away leave, I guess, is that you just piss off this sergeant.
You turn people into a bunch of rapists.
It was
that guy's fault.
It was that guy, the guy that wouldn't let him through the gate. So instead they have to go back to the room and get drunk. And what are they drinking? Well, hell, it's some cans of Sponsorship Corner.
There we go.
Not very many to get into this. I mean, the Michael J. Fox movies have definitely had a lot of sponsors, but not this one, not this one. But Sponsorship Corner brought to you by MoviePosters.com. With over 100,000 titles to choose from, MoviePosters.com is the number one destination for posters from your favorite films and stars. Use Like This One 15 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. And Casualties of War, if it is your favorite movie, I saw some posters on MoviePosters.com. There are the options of some, like, behind-the-scenes pictures you can buy from movie. They don't have just posters. It's kind of interesting. Like, if you want, you could just Google Sean Penn, and every Sean Penn movie will come out. But I'm procrastinating because not very many sponsors this week. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Casualties of War is brought to you by, Budweiser beer. They're drinking some good old Bud. And Jack Daniel's whiskey. Oreo cookies. Marlboro cigarettes. And Life magazine. That's it. That's all I got. But, I mean,
it is an international film, so
yeah,
it's going to be harder.
Yeah. You can only get that stuff in care packages. So there we go. This has been Sponsorship Corner. So, I was so witty when I took my notes, and I missed this one. When he did get stuck in the hole, I put, Michael gets stuck in a foxhole.
Clever.
Yeah, I thought that was, yeah. I would have liked a little bit more exploration of that, because even when he goes and stands up to the one general, and he, or general, whatever he is, captain, I don't know what he is, but he stands up to that guy and gets reassigned to Tunnel Rat. I wanted to see a little bit of Tunnel Rat action. I wanted to see what that job was all about. That's a part of Vietnam I know nothing about. Even if I want to pretend I know shit about other stuff, until yesterday when I watched this fucking movie, I didn't know they had tunnels under that shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had heard about that. You know, for all this movie has, it's like the least war movie I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of base camp.
Yeah, even how we were talking before about, like, I don't know, it's just kind of like they obviously, like, they had the premise of the story and the real life thing. And it's like, I felt like they just wanted to, it's almost like they wanted to just get to that, the court stuff at the end.
Yeah.
And just have it laid out. I feel like if you weren't trying to tell, like, the real story, that was kind of more of like a, even though I think they say it is a based on, but
yeah,
whatever. My point is, I don't think they did enough showing the war to explain to you why these guys are so messed up.
Mm-hmm. They keep saying that he only has a month left. Like, only a month left on his service. It's like, well, my history's a little rusty. What is the length of deployment?
Yeah.
Like, that he only has 1 month left. Like, is this one of 3 months? Or is this 1 month left out of, like, 3 years that he's been there?
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have ears hanging around his neck and shit. You know, like, he hasn't gone that much off the deep end that we see in most other Vietnam movies.
Yeah. And every time somebody gets killed, I don't know, it's just not treated in a way that, like, matters for the audience.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when the black guy got killed at the beginning, I was kind of like, what the fuck? And then I was just, but it was like, they just kind of, like, move on. And you don't really get, like, a good sense of how it's, like, affecting the group.
Except for our sergeant.
Yeah.
Because we do get that one scene where he's, like, weirdly shaving with his straight razor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where I expected that straight razor to come back.
Yeah.
Because they were so focused on, like, the intensity that he shaves with his straight razor. Yeah, but yeah, you can see that it's fucked him up at that moment, and then that's when they get leave taken away from them and everything. But other than that, you're right. I don't see a lot of the wear of,
like, when they have that, when Erickson and that other dude are talking and they have that, like, weird guy who's just, like, I don't know,
the guy that steps on the mine. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's never, like, explained, and then he just blows up.
Yeah.
And you're kind of just like, okay, like, I guess, like,
he's
what?
He's just your red shirt.
Yeah.
He was brought in with one purpose, and that's to show some naive kid and how seasoned he is at that point. Like, he's now grizzled. He's been there. He's seen some shit. And
yeah,
look at this young punk that, you know, because that's who he was at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. But it's weird because I was like, you know, Erickson, his big, like, guilt is, like, that he didn't save that girl. Like, he didn't want to be a deserter, so he didn't take her off by himself, and he didn't kill Clark or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, like, why isn't he upset about kind of sending that guy off to his death? Like, if he had just been cool with that kid and just let them stand next to him or whatever, by him, or, like, walk behind him, that guy would still be alive. Like, it's like there should have been, like, an added element of guilt to, like,
fuck, and this guy too.
Yeah, like oh, like,
Omaha,
you
Nebraska
just
steps on a landmine. Oh,
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, it's like just this level of, like, day, man, I can't do anything right. Like, I'm constantly, like, getting people killed, and it's my fault. Like, that kind of, like, gravitas. Yeah, like,
but then you're falling on the possibility of, like, being in an airplane movie. Oh, why does everything happen to me?
Yeah.
All these other people are dying around him. Yeah, you're right, 'cause that scene is him trying to like get off his chest what he witnessed, what should he do about it. So like he is still letting this other thing with the girl affect him, that you're right, it's weird for him to be so callous to this, you know, little opie motherfucker stepping on an, you know, on the landmine.
Yeah, it just, again, it's one of those things with this movie where it seems like there's a lot of like shit thrown at the wall, and then I, as like the viewer, I'm like trying to like it may be wrongly, because it's like it's one of those things, it's hard to know if I'm clearly trying to like watch it with a critical eye. I wonder if I wasn't, if I if that would have just like, if I was just watching this to enjoy it, if it would have just like washed over me. But like
The pacing was
the
weird.
but I kept like seeing these things and like trying, and it was like I could feel my brain trying to like spin in circles to make meaning of things that just like in the end kind of just seemed like they ended up being meaningless.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we are in Foxvember. We're here to talk about Michael J. Fox. So I want to highlight him for a moment and say I was actually impressed with some of his dramatic performance in this movie. I am so glad that they didn't play against type on him, though, because if the roles, like, let's just for shits and giggles say the roles are reversed and he is playing the sergeant. I
Oh
am
yeah.
not buying him for shit in
No.
anything other than this, like, tattletale character.
Yeah, for sure. I'll say this, if anything, this movie kind of, I think, turned me on Michael J. Fox. I actually was like super impressed by his ability to do
He can do a thing.
to do drama and not just haha. And like be sincere about it, even though it's like his drama inches ever so closely to just being whiny,
Oh, it does.
which is really tough.
It's
But
true.
like I think, like as I said before, I expected that he was gonna get totally outclassed by Sean Penn, just knowing like who Sean Penn is now. And I was like pleasantly surprised, like he holds his own with Sean Penn in this movie. Even though I randomly like watched this video, I think it was, I don't know what Brian De Palma looks like, but it seemed like it was an interview with Brian De Palma. And he was mentioning that like apparently there was a lot of like strife between Sean Penn and Michael J. Fox on this movie. And that in right before the scene where the dude hits him, where Michael J. Fox hits the other guy with a shovel, like Sean Penn like basically just like grabbed him and like roughed him up and like threw him to the ground to like piss Michael J. Fox off, so that he would, because he was just, the way De Palma kind of paints it is like Michael J. Fox was having a lot of trouble of getting in the headspace to do that role, like to do that drama. And so Sean Penn was like kind of like just really
Antagonizing
mean
him.
to him and antagonizing towards him, to the point that even he said that like in the scene at the end when Meserve walks by Erickson and whispers in his ear, one take he said TV actor to him as he walked up.
Well, I guess he
Yes.
was doing, I read somewhere that he was doing a lot of that on set is when it
Yeah.
was Michael J. Fox's shot, when it was his close up. From off camera, he was just calling him like a useless TV actor and
Yeah.
sitcom actor and shit like that.
And that's
He
cold.
was.
But I mean, it worked, I think. Like, I
I
think
guess
he.
so.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, like getting off Michael J. Fox, I want to talk about John C. Reilly because, you know, if this had been my introduction to John C. Reilly, and let's say that I've never actually seen this movie. I mean, because if I have, you know, I had no idea who John C. Reilly was at the time. But if this had been my introduction, I don't know how I would feel about current day John C. Reilly with some of the stuff that he's done.
Yeah,
Right?
he's like
Like
a completely different. You can see it there, but
the
this movie,
buffoon a little bit,
yeah,
yeah.
it's kind of like, I think this John C. Reilly like kind of reminded me of like Seth Rogen. I think they have like a really like similar thing. Seth Rogen kind of started, I guess, more like on the funny, but like, and then moved serious like later. But I could kind of see like they have a similar. He has a John C. Reilly in this movie to me has like kind of a current day Seth Rogen
Okay. It's just it was fascinating to me to see John C. Reilly because like I know that even nowadays like he does do serious shit, but we know him from Step Brothers and Talladega Nights. I mean, we like even Chicago was something that I was more familiar with where he's the put upon what's his Amos in that one. So it's
But it's
I
also
just
just he looks so youthful in this movie. Like even in Talladega Nights and like everything else I've seen him in like more recently. Like
He's a middle-aged man by the time you get Talladega Nights.
he just looks more like dad, you know, like that old dad guy. Whereas like in this it was so weird. It was 'cause the voice is the same. So it's like you hear, I'm hearing him talking. I'm like, that's him. But like, and then when I look closely, I'm like, oh, I can see it's him. But like, it's hard to reconcile that it's John C. Reilly in this movie.
It
Similarly,
really is.
with John Leguizamo,
A little bit.
he also looks really different in this movie. Like he's not like, I don't know, like around the time of like The Pest, mate, like he's so thin now. He's not like the thin like rail John Leguizamo that we know now in this movie. Like he's kind of like he's not fat, but he just like he has more, he looks like he has like I would call it like baby fat almost on him. Like he just that like youthful, like I don't know.
He's not quite chiseled yet.
I thought that character was weird. I'm not gonna lie. I was wondering if it was like because he replaces the black guy, I was like, oh, do they just need a minority for this platoon right now?
They
Like,
needed to keep it colorful,
but I thought even more could have been made of the fact that like, you know, he's all like, well, I don't want to rape any, but he turns too quick. Like he turned like he that betrayal happened, I think, like way too fast. And too easy that it, I don't know,
Like
it
the
just,
very next scene, basically. Got to make sure that we get that scene out right away just in case you forgot the promise that he made to him. Kind of a dick move, though, to throw him under the bus like that, though. God, Diaz, you're such a pushover.
I do think too, like in the overall arc of the story, they make it sound like it, you know, obviously, like they were gonna. He wouldn't have made it out of alive if he had done what he did. But I felt like they should have like put some more of that up front, like even before the fight breaks out. If you don't do it, like we're gonna kill you or whatever. Like have it be, you know, like right before Meserve tells Erickson to like kill her, and he like refuses to do it. So then he gets the other. But it's never like they never really like threaten his life.
No, not really. It's and there is a lot of kind of domestic abuse behavior going on in the fact that he's doing a lot of getting mad, and then going to him later on and being like, "I'm sorry, baby, I didn't mean to talk to you like that." Like there's a lot of that back and forth as well. So you're right, there's no threat because he keeps apologizing for his actions. I don't know. Like Clark is definitely more of a threat. That motherfucker is crazy. That guy is, he's definitely got a few screws loose.
I should have looked it up, but I was also curious in the sentencing what it means. Because it sounds like most of them are like sentenced to hard labor, but Clark specifically is sentenced to prison. And I was like, what does hard labor mean?
Work camp?
Just to like you work?
Breaking rocks.
But like, are you allowed to like stamp and license plates? Or I don't know.
I'm not sure. Peeling potatoes. I mean, that's the army stereotype, isn't it? I don't know. I should send Aaron a text and see if he knows. So once again, I'm just kind of baffled by the lack of intensity behind some of the war stuff. Because after they have done all their horrific things, and we've got the bit where they're up on the ridge watching the river, and, you know, we have our almost escape of the girl, but she doesn't understand. She's not as smart as Harry and the Henderson. She doesn't know that she needs to go away now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I did like their connection. I thought, again, like you said, Michael J. Fox did a lot better. But anyway, we're at the top of the ridge. Everybody is there. The girl is coughing. They say they have to murder her because her coughing is going to give away their position.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, the whole time, Sean Penn is going, do it, do it, do it. Now, is he saying this louder than the cough? Because the audio on my TV made it sound like it was coming out louder than the audio of the cough.
Yeah.
That's going to give away your position more. And so there just seems to be a bit of a, I don't know, inconsistency when it comes to what is going to give away their position up there. Because there's a lot of noise happening that's not just this cough.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's like kids playing hide and seek. Shh, he'll find us. He'll find us. Hee hee.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was 1916. There were times where, like, even the music, I mean, I'm not like super familiar, but there are a few songs where I was like, I could have swore that came out after the war happened, but I should have double checked.
Yeah, yeah. I do like, though, that whole scene, though, after they get pinned down. I mean, again, it lacks some sort of intensity for some reason, but I do like how it's all set up with them on the train tracks, and you see him firing, and in the background you see the guy stabbing the girl. Yeah. And just the last ditch effort of Erickson firing off his gun in the air to stop them from killing her, but it doesn't do anything in the long run anyway. But that was the only time that I really felt any sense of dread in this movie, or any sense of panic or tension, I guess, maybe is the word I'm looking for, is the whole bit with she might get away, shoot her. Yeah, everything from the ridge on to the railroad tracks kind of was the only part of it that I found intense at all. Because even when he's dangling in the tunnel with the guy with the knife coming up on him, you know, I didn't feel the same tension that I felt at this end moment. So I do want to give a shout out to this, because I think this was a well done scene.
Yeah.
The whole attempted escape.
Yeah. And again, I think maybe it's because they were trying to lean into the real story. But I think, like, cinematically, I wanted more from I wanted there to be more of a distinct standoff. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if they had done it, like, as if they were making a real movie, there would have been more of a, like, where Erickson, like, stopped.
As if they were making a real movie.
Yeah. Like, they were trying to make a real movie and not an art piece. Okay. Like, for entertainment purposes. Where, like, Erickson would have, like, ran up, and you would have had the girl bleeding out in the middle. You'd had the three guys on one side, Meserve there. I don't know. These guys all must be master marksmen, because, really crazy that you would fire a gun, like, in the direction of your sergeant. But anyways. But it's like, I would have liked a moment for Erickson to appeal to each one of them to just say, like, guys, like, what are we doing? Like, stop. Like, don't you see? Like one of these, like, just like these moments that we see in movies. But it all happens just so quick. It's like he runs up, he gets gut punched by Meserve. He's like, shoot her. They do hesitate briefly, but then they just shoot her, and then she's gone. But I just think, like, yeah, it's one of this movie. Maybe my overall thought on this movie is, despite it being like 2 hours almost, mm-hmm. a lot could have been done if they had let a little bit more stuff breathe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let some tension build.
Well, and I mean, going back to the idea of starting at the end rather than this train moment, like starting with the trial,
mm-hmm.
or and you know, like layering it in that way, I've kind of got that idea stuck in my head now, because when we get to this train scene, this feels like the fucking climax.
Yeah.
It feels like we should go from this directly into the trial.
Yeah.
But instead, we have like another half hour of him just wandering around trying to get someone to listen to him.
Yeah.
And then almost getting blowed up with a grenade in the latrine.
Yeah, totally.
Like, but this feels like the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I was like blown away when the movie continued after that scene of him in the helicopter. Like when he wakes up in the infirmary and I was like, oh, we still got 30 minutes left. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. So I think that if you had used some sort of different storytelling format, you know, and made it a little bit more interesting in that way, then you could have used this more as the climax of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I have a note here that during the court martials, when they show Michael J. Fox in the uniform, he looks so much smaller than everyone.
I know.
And but he kind of looks like the before Captain America.
Yeah.
Wimpy Steve Rogers. That's how he looks in his uniform.
Yeah, I also don't maybe it was because I had like a couple of days before I had listened to this like long interview with Tom Holland.
Okay, yeah.
And so I had, like, Peter Parker, like, Spider-Man on the brain. And I was just like...
Very comparable.
Tom Holland might be, like, the second coming of Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Like, they're very similar actors, I think.
Yeah, if they ever were to make a Back to the Future. But he'll age out of it by the time that happens, I'm sure. But anyway... They do have quite a similarity to each other. I could see Tom Holland doing any one of these Michael J. Fox roles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like the moment of him stopping the grenade by shooting it out of the air. And he's so proud of what he did while the guy... See, and again, that's probably a moment that most movies would throw in there to just relieve just a little bit of tension with everything that was going on. But there wasn't enough tension with the fact that this other guy was on the ground dying. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, there wasn't enough of there wasn't enough tension for that to be one of those, you know, moments of breaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie also leaves me with a bunch of questions. Like, did the soldiers actually, like, farm?
Like, oh, yeah.
He's really taken aback by the idea of farming with the guy with the ox, you know, like, using the plow. Were the soldiers over there doing shit like this?
I mean, I think they're trying to make it, like, Erickson is kind of there with the ideal that they're helping the Vietnamese people and like helping to really like bring peace. And like, so he wants to like,
that's humanitarian shit.
Yeah. He wants to like learn about the culture and that kind of stuff. Like even when he's trying to talk to the girl, like you can tell that he's like tried to like learn some of the language so that he could like communicate with them and stuff. Whereas like the other guys, it doesn't really seem like any of them have. He's kind of there with like that idea that, you know, we're I don't know, it's probably similar to like even like modern day, like in Iraq or Afghanistan, where you like, you know, some people are we're not just going to steal oil. Like we're here to help free these people from like tyranny and evil and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So at the end, everybody gets sentenced. I have the length of sentences here and what happened in reality. Diaz got 8 years of hard labor. In reality, it was 4, and afterwards shortened to 22 months. So Diaz only ever did 22 months, or whoever, like, if that's a real name. I think only a couple of the names were changed. I think only
like Hatcher was the same, because for whatever reason he's like the one that in the credits they like
said that he was acquitted. Yeah, he got 15 years, but in reality he was acquitted in appeal. So I don't know, someone fucked up on paperwork there. And Clark got a life sentence, and in reality it was reduced to 20 years and then to 8, and he was paroled after 3. So Clark only ever did 3 years. Oh, and Meserve got 10 years, and in reality it was reduced to 8, and he was paroled after 2. Mm. Yeah. And then it ended up that she was not murdered. Trenton Owen, however you say it, was not murdered by the entire squad as depicted in the film's climax. In reality, Stephen Thomas, that's the real PFC Clark, is Stephen Thomas, was the only person who committed the crime by gunshot wound to the head. And so, yeah, he only ended up serving 4 years.
Oh, wow.
But after his release, he committed another murder in relation to racism in 1992. He killed someone else in a hate crime. So, you know, PFC Clark was a real stand-up guy in real life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I found that interesting. And then, yeah, at the end of the movie, we're back at the beginning where, for some reason, this girl that looks like her has made him want to return. Like, because even if they're setting up some sort of, like, love idea with this, right? Because it is weird that he's returning his scarf to pay for all his war crimes. That's somehow going to make up for it. But even if this was a love thing, I mean, he's married. Like, they make it very clear that he's got a wife and kids back home. So, I don't know. Yeah, the book ending of the train was unnecessary. I guess Brian De Palma just liked symmetry or something.
Yeah.
Because it also opens with the words casualties of war and then ends with the words casualties of war.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole train piece could have just been removed, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Because it also threw me off for a minute, because at the beginning of the movie, you feel like this is something that's happening before he goes off to war. And then all of a sudden he's in war and you have no idea that that's after the war. And sure, that could be a fun twist if it was actually relevant.
Yeah.
But here I thought it was going to be something that would come up in war instead, where he remembers the girl on the train. Right?
Yeah. You know what a better bookend would have been is like, Erickson is in the grocery store, and then across the distance he sees Meserve at the milk aisle. Then we flash back to war, and then we and then at the end of the movie we cut back, and Meserve is like, he's kind of like destitute and poor and he can't pay for the milk, and Erickson comes and pays for the milk, and Meserve doesn't recognize him because he's like a drunk PTSD'd out war vet or something like that.
Okay.
And then it's like, you know what? He's paid for his crimes.
Justice has been served.
Yeah, justice has been served. Take your milk, you asshole.
Well, there we go. That's casualties of war. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored a 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 75, not bad. And on Rotten Tomatoes, 84% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 75. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a shovel to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
Alrighty. Chris says, 5 out of 5 stars. I know everyone loves Back to the Future. I do as well. But this is Michael J. Fox's best work, period. I feel for him so much in this film. I am a vet, and once I'm made sergeant, I actually would use his line, since we can die in a split second, we need to be better. And yes, this happens to many soldiers, feel they can do anything, and things happen that shouldn't. I always try to remember how this destroyed Michael's character. I would hear about things from time to time, and I promise I cared and did what I could do, but there isn't much you can do other than keep your platoon on straight and narrow. Good job, Michael. And if you read this, what a powerful film.
Okay. I like him standing up not only to the Sarge, but also, like, I do like when he's going around. I like the scene with him and the gray-haired guy. Like, I don't know what that guy, who that guy was, but I like that scene. The sweep it under the rug scene. I thought that was another well-done scene.
Spencer says 4 out of 5 stars. Brian De Palma really knows how to make a great film. He taps into human psychology on many levels. He makes a story, a movie intriguing. This is a different take within a very heavily focused genre. For that reason, with such a high quality cast, it sells itself as realistic and terrifyingly convincing. It shows the absolute disgust that mankind is capable of. It takes a pretty strong stomach and mind to deal with this movie, but it's worth it. Recommended for its overall high quality, if nothing else.
Okay, yeah, or attempt at high quality at least.
We have a 1 star.
Okay.
Gabe gives this a 1 star review, says the worst Vietnam War movie of all time. A lot of 4 and 5 stars don't know what movie they were watching. This movie never grabbed my attention when it first came out. I decided to give it a shot after years of procrastinating. The score was horrible and didn't match the scenes, and overall wasn't very good. No Hans Zimmer here. Sean Penn's accent wasn't convincing, and I like his acting, but he was a no-go. Everyone looked too rested and clean, and the uniforms were way too clean and not faded. The overall feel and mood of the sets were too polished. Looked like everyone had access to a barber and shaved daily, no problem. They then tried to use every Vietnam movie stereotype and cliche. The horror of this film, well, was this film. The lightning was too bright, and or the I think I meant to, the lighting was too bright and cheerful considering the content. Tried to give this movie the benefit of the doubt, but it was no Platoon or Full Metal Jacket. I think that guy is correct in a lot of kind of
Some
what
of
you were
those
talking
words
about.
sum up sanitized. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little too shiny. It's not dirty enough. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, I had a little extra review to throw in here. It's not really a review. It is something that I found in trivia, but it's funny because it goes against what that guy just said. Apparently Quentin Tarantino has hailed this the film as the greatest film about the Vietnam War. That's the only quote I have, is the greatest film about the Vietnam War, but that's what Quentin Tarantino thinks. So we might have to get those two in a ring together, in the octagon together. Yeah.
There you go. Hell the cell.
Right on. Yeah, so I like our re-edit of this movie. Like the one guy said basically there was, I wish that this movie was a bit dirtier. Like they quoted Platoon and Full Metal Jacket. Yeah, those movies are definitely dirtier, muddier. These guys, they did feel a little, even Forrest Gump felt dirtier. It was always raining in Forrest Gump. Where was the upwards rain in this movie? It was fine. The performances were great. I kind of wish that Sean Penn would take the chew out of his mouth every once in a while. His lip always full of chew. But the performances were great, but there was something missing for me, and it really is that re-edit that fantasy re-edit of ours where move some things around and unpeel the story rather than tell it the way you did. And yeah, you've got a great story, you just have a bad storyteller, unfortunately, because I saw potential in this, but it just there were things missing for me. And I like yeah, it's a tough one to say. I liked the performances. I didn't like the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's one of those ones where all the ingredients were there.
Yeah.
They just weren't cooked right. That's kind of how I think I can sum up everything that I've said. I think my like stance on this movie is pretty clear based on what I've said
Yeah.
already, but that's kind of how I would sum it up. I think in terms of Foxvember and the reason for the month, I do think this was one in the This was a win for Michael J. Fox
This is a
with me,
win.
I think. So,
Right on.
if nothing else, we have that.
So we're now 1-3. Okay, cool. We'll see what next week brings. Well, no, you kind of turned. You did admit that Back to the Future is better on a second viewing and talking about it with people that love the movie. So we do have that. That's so we've got 2.5 to 1.5 going on here. Right on. Well, there we go. That's Casualties of War, and that's our show for the week. Oh boy, just. Guys, come on, just tell somebody about the show. That's all the, you know, that's all that we ask for. You know, word of mouth is so important for a show. Or if you don't want to talk to people because you're an introvert, well, just go over to, you know, whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and just give us some stars. You know, you can be subtle about that. You can be anonymous, but give us some stars. Help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or become a producer of the show. Throw us a couple bucks and go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family, and then you get a shout out on the show, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. And then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Shout out to our new sponsor, movieposters.com. Don't forget, like this one, 15 at checkout to get 15% off. And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, one left in Foxvember. So we're going back to a comedy column because really there's not a lot of dramas in the Michael J. Fox catalog. And I don't know if I've even seen any of the other dramas, come to think of it. Bright Lights, Big City is one of them. I can't even think of what the other one is. But anyway, back to a comedy. This is a movie that I loved a lot, actually, when I was younger. And for some reason, it reminds me of Last Action Hero, which is kind of from a similar time as well.
Okay.
So next week we're going to do a buddy cop movie, sort of, where it's The Hard Way. Michael J. Fox and James Woods. Have you ever seen The Hard Way?
Say I have not.
Yeah, I figured so. Yeah, I saw that coming. We've been talking about Michael J. Fox. Do you have any touches with James Woods? Other than Family Guy.
I was just going to say, I think only Family Guy.
Okay.
Like, what else? I was trying to think, what else is James might... You know, okay, this is what happened. Every time I thought of James Woods, I was like, oh no, I remember him in this. Who I was actually thinking of was Dennis Leary.
Ah.
Interesting,
okay.
So I'm not sure. I don't know, like, now I'm like... Everything that I thought was James Woods, I realized was Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
So now I'm not sure if I have seen anything of James Woods other than Family Guy.
I'll have to look up a couple things that James Woods might be in before next week and see if I can help you out on that. Because I'll admit, off the top of my head, nope, Family Guy and this are the only two things that I know James Woods for, too. So at least I've got this over you. That's how deep my knowledge of him goes, so I don't know. Well, there we go. So until next week, when we close out Foxvember with The Hard Way, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you then on I Used to Like This One.